KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com. Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Sport and personal use harvest of razor clams will open this summer on the east side of Cook Inlet for the first time since 2015. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced a limited opening for razor clams July 1st through 4th on east side Cook Inlet beaches from 3 miles north of Nanilchik, south to the tip of Homer Spit. Mike Booz is the lower Cook Inlet area management biologist for Fish and Game.
I'm excited that everybody gets a chance to go clamming. Unlike other sport fisheries that we have here, you know, there's no real catch and release opportunity for razor clams. And so people haven't really had a chance to, you know, be out on the beach, you know, just to dig and see what these clams are like after this long closure period.
East side razor clam populations have struggled over the last decade. A management plan adopted by the Alaska Board of Fisheries in 2022 allows for a limited harvest opportunity when adult clam abundance meets or exceeds 50% of historical average abundance. Fish and Game says clam populations at Clam Gulch do not meet that threshold this year. Populations in the Nanilchik area do, but even though adult clam abundance has improved around Nanilchik, Fish and Game says the 2023 juvenile abundance is the lowest since 2013, which means there probably won't be an opening next year.
This is likely to be the way the fishery goes, you know, moving forward, that we have a small harvest opportunity in 1 year, and then it might go back to being closed for a couple years, and the numbers build back up, and, you know, we have another small fishery opportunity.
Greg N. Saluski is president of the Nanilchik Traditional Council and Nanilchik Natives Association, and a member of the Federal Subsistence Board's Southeast Regional Advisory Council. He wants to see the clams left alone until the population is higher.
All of our members so far are just disgusted with the opening. We feel that it's way too soon. The clams have not recovered, and the impact is going to be tremendous on the beaches, whether they think so or not. We're going to have just about everyone in Anchorage down here to dig that weekend on the 4th of July. And I think that you start multiplying the numbers and the families, it's going to really impact them.
Booz says the opening is designed to keep harvest within the management plan objective of no more than 10% of adult abundance on any given beach. Beyond only being open for 4 days, the bag and possession limit is 15 clams per person per day, and you must harvest the first 15 clams dug, no matter what the size. Booz says Fish and Game will monitor the fishery at the primary beach access sites in Nanilchik, Deep Creek, and Whiskey Gulch to count how many people are participating and how many clams are harvested. If harvest looks like it will exceed the 10% threshold, the department is prepared to shut it down early.
All of our members so far are just disgusted with the opening. We feel that it's way too soon. The clams have not recovered, and the impact is going to be tremendous on the beaches, whether they think so or not. We're going to have just about everyone in Anchorage down here to dig that weekend on the 4th of July. And I think that you start multiplying the numbers and the families, it's going to really impact them.
More information on the opening is available at adfg.alaska.gov. Thanks to KDLL's Jenny Naiman for that story.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Invasive green crabs are in Alaska, and they are destructive, outcompeting native species and destroying essential eelgrass. At a workshop in Metlakatla last month, citizen scientists learned from experts how to look out for the invasive crabs in their own communities. KRBD's Reagan Miller has more.
Scientists and concerned Alaskans are at Tamagus Harbor. They're getting a first-hand look at the European green crab, and time is of the essence. The crabs showed up in southern southeast Alaska last summer, and more than 800 have been found since.
It's like we hit the ground running coming out here.
Taylor Stumpf is with the Wildlife Department of Metlakatla's tribe. He's helping people learn to identify, measure, and document the crabs. The workshop drew participants from around the region, including Ketchikan, Cake, and Prince of Wales Island. For now, Metlakatla is the only place in Alaska to document live green crabs, which are destroying vital eelgrass and habitat for abalone, clams, and Dungeness crabs. But that doesn't mean they won't spread. That's why the workshop, which was organized by local, state, federal, and tribal agencies, focused on training people to identify the crabs and alert authorities before it's too late to control the spread. People aren't allowed to kill the crabs themselves, but they are encouraged to collect information and alert authorities. That's what the workshop is teaching them to do. Stumpf explains a few key tells for a crab that doesn't belong.
They have the five spines on either side of the eyes and then the three bumps in the middle. So we've been teaching people with guides how to identify the crabs.
Ewa Booth is showing people how to set and bait different kinds of traps. She's an intern with Metlakatla's Wildlife Department. She says the tribe has been experimenting with what works best.
They usually like chum and herring fish. We haven't really used cat food like they suggested.
Booth says she's noticed a difference on the beach since the first crab was found last year.
Eelgrass is important because it's like habitat for other clams and like juvenile fish, juvenile salmon. So it was kind of a worry for us when they first arrived, and I've noticed that they've gotten a lot shorter too, like the eelgrass.
There's no surefire way to eradicate the crabs once they've arrived. But Janelle Winter, Metlakatla's invasive species coordinator, says the key is to just keep finding them. She says Metlakatla has always protected its resources, and that's what the town will keep doing.
It just sharpened everybody's need or awareness to protect those resources, right? Like, those resources were already super precious. It's wanting to make sure they stay intact.
Each female crab is capable of laying hundreds of eggs. In Metlakatla, green crab catching is a full day's work. Just ask Gabriel Nathan.
Yeah, we've been catching a lot when they were molting, when they're trying to hatch eggs and everything, and we caught like over probably 40 green crab with eggs still attached to them. And that slowed down a lot, so it was great.
The workshop's message is also one of hope. If everyone learns to spot these crabs, maybe there's a way to protect other communities. Trey Patterson with Metlakatla's Wildlife Department says that's the goal.
I think that the state or other places near us were taking it as seriously as we were. So to see something like this happening today here on the island, it's great to see that more people are taking this issue seriously.
Patterson says everyone has a stake in stopping the crabs and that things will get even worse if the crabs keep moving north. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
In the Kuskokwim River hub city of Bethel, everything is seemingly connected to fishing in one way or another. The beginning of summer really means the beginning of the fishing season, and as KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, the frantic passage of thousands of smelt through Bethel last week was a signal that summer had begun.
We dry them, fry them, bake them, boil them, freeze them.
Smoke them. Dry them and smoke them.
I smoke them and then I jar them like sardines, you know?
We whisk eggs, put it in, then put it in flour, then deep brown.
These are really good. I'm a bodybuilder. You could go up 50 pounds on these in like no time.
In front of the Joe Lomac building on the Bethel Riverfront, people with extended dip nets jockey for position along the seawall to catch the peak of the run swimming upriver from Oscarville. Bill Howell has been fishing the smelt since 1987.
It's all about timing. I mean, they could just come through for 6-8 hours and it's done.
But this wasn't combat fishing by any means. What seemed to be on people's minds was spreading as much fish as possible around the community.
You want us to help you? We'll fill
we
up your bucket.
Already.
We'll fill up your bucket.
One man claiming that his legal name was Ricky Spider-Man tirelessly scooped up a dozen or more smelt in each net load to dole out to passers-by.
I'm trying to fill up as much of these as possible and just give it to the people that come by till people quit coming.
On a Bethel Facebook group, calls went out for sharing the harvest. Some volunteered their dip nets, and for those who couldn't make it to the riverfront, there were multiple willing delivery drivers. One man was even reportedly seen going door-to-door offering up the fresh smelt to any takers. Moses Dooney didn't even plan to fish the smelt, but he hasn't been able to return to his home village of Russian Mission on the Yukon River due to the runway being flooded. So he decided to give it a shot.
We're getting homesick, but I'm very happy to get some smelts. I will share these with my family members at Russian Mission. We don't get these at home.
The day before, Connie Pavla had gotten a hold of some of the smelt near Napaskak on their journey upriver to Bethel.
The ones we worked on yesterday, they're smaller than these. These are bigger. It's too fun. You get carried away. You overcatch too. You guys gonna get any more?
We'll come back, yeah.
Before they run off, then go attack. Holy moly, these are bigger.
Paul Roll and Katie Daniels only had to walk a few feet from their offices at the Lomac building to get a piece of the action.
You got the touch, Katie. Son of a gun. You got the touch.
Oops. No, I don't. Oh, she only caught one that time. What's going on, Katie?
Oh, I don't know.
Is it the reporter?
Yeah, just ruined the vibe.
This is amazing. Where else can you go smelting 30 yards from your office door? And we're off the clock, too, by the way.
By early evening, the flow of smelt began to subside. Thousands of the nutrient-rich fish are being spread throughout the community thanks to a culture of sharing going back millennia. The smelt run marks the beginning of the season of harvesting, and for those living along the Kuskokwim River, it is just one example of nature's bounty.
Subsistence in general is the highlight of living in Bethel. Not having to eat all that factory farm junk from all over the planet. You know, I mean, we get all this beautiful, natural, indigenous protein here, and it just can't be beat, man. You can't do it better than Mother Nature, you know.
In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice-weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.